What's up, people? You're now tuned in to Wrestle Extra, your weekly dose of everything black wrestling, brought to you by Black Wrestling Alliance, with co-hosts myself, Mex, the WrestleManiac, and of course, the Professor Gerard Bonner. Make sure you leave us a review, 5-star rating on whatever podcast platform you're using, and tune in to Wrestle Extra every Tuesday. Enjoy.
Yo, 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 this is a Wrestle Extra. I'm your boy, A Dazzle, the Black Wrestling Advocate. Always joined by my trio's team, the Real House of Black, Mex, the WrestleManiac, if you will. Yeah. And of course, the Professor, the omnipresent man of knowledge that is Gerard Bonner. What a crazy weekend of wrestling it has been. Saturday was packed full of this, that, and debuts. But let's head ourselves back to 7 days ago, first of all, when Obafemi, the man who a week before that won the 2024 NXT Breakout Tournament and would find himself cashing in, not on the NXT champion, Ilya Dragunov, but instead on the NXT North American champion, Dragon Lee. Dragon Lee was in a match, his usual open challenge, this time facing Lexus King, defeated Lexus King, but then Obafemi decided it was his time to fulfill his destiny, as he's been saying for the last 2 weeks. It only took a week for him to fulfill destiny. It's amazing. It's phenomenal. But Mex, I'm going to go to you first. When he won the breakout tournament, and there was big talk of when is he going to cash it in? Is he going to do it when Trix becomes champion? Is he going to do it beforehand? Blah, blah, blah. But then a week later, he does it on the North American Championship. Good decision, bad decision. Was it what you were expecting? What are your thoughts?
I think it's a great decision. I think that he's someone that he's... This is maybe what... That final was maybe his fourth or fifth televised match on NXT. Maybe not level up, like real NXT, right? And the crowd swell. There's a lot of people behind him in the crowd. I don't even know how the higher-ups feel about him. Clearly, quite highly. But, you know, even in the crowd, you can see, like, you know, people are buying into him pretty quickly. There's nobody like him on NXT. NXT is more so, I mean this politely, like a land of smaller people, in terms of the new kind of hybrid wrestler that we get these days. You've got your Josh Briggs and stuff like that, which are outside of the mold. We could even argue somewhat Josh Briggs has, his arsenal is more hybrid in ways. So Obafemi kind of is that throwback to, you know, the classic kind of big powerhouse kind of wrestler. Unique in terms of his I don't want to call it a gimmick just yet. Just his character, as it is right now, is pretty unique as to what they have on the roster. And that breakout star, the breakout tournament, sorry, was always going to, you know, create some new stars, as we've seen previously with Carmelo Hayes. Just really pushed Carmelo Hayes into a different stratosphere. Really, we spoke last week about Riley Osborne and Tavon as well, and Obafemi. And Obafemi wins, and they have that great segment backstage last week where it's like he's talking about again his destiny, that he's gonna win, he's gonna cash in, blah blah blah, and that Dragon Lee has the title match, and the little just sly look down at the contract when the interviewer told him that the title match is happening in the main event. Dragon Lee wins his match, which is good, because you don't want kind of Obafemi looking opportunist to kind of cash in, you know, while the match is going on or anything like that. He waited till the match was done. He came out with the referee, done the exchange. They done the typical WWE thing where he's clearly told the referee, I want to put this in. And the referee's like, are you sure? And Dragon Lee was a good sport with it as well. He didn't back down. He didn't run away. He thought he could take on the big guy. And I think with Obafemi winning it, it provides a shock, like a really big shock. Mm. I think it cements Dragon Lee almost now main roster. You know, he's going to stay on the main roster now. and it's almost like a blockage. I kind of made this comparison during the week. This is like Jade Cargill winning the TBS title, in a sense that I feel like we have to do something with this person, like now. Like Jade Cargill, if you remember, came to that point in AEW where she was just running wild. The streak was there. It's like, well, we know she doesn't quite have the experience just yet to go for the world title. What do we do with this person? And they created the TBS title. Rightfully, at the time, she was the TBS champion. And I almost feel this is the kind of same thing with Obafemi. It would be a bit silly for him to be having uber competitive matches with people of the stature of a Dragon Lee and stuff, who are, like I say, mainly what makes up NXT. Did we have to shoot him right to this position right now? Maybe not, but I don't think it's a, you know, it's a downer. If you think that we can get away with it, we can put him on a little run, build up this championship, and you know, he can showcase himself against some maybe more experienced guys, albeit smaller guys, then I don't see what's wrong with it. So I think that's why I make the comparison. It's almost like it wouldn't be believable for him to be doing anything else apart from being a champion, at least. We're still running the Dragon of stuff, so let's put him in the mid-card. But yeah, really, really good to see the heritage of the North American title staying amongst the black community.
Come on.
Let's
talk about it.
You know, we have little stints where, you know, Dragon Lee, and it's still what the ethnics are still, you know, in and amongst. But yeah, it's really funny the way this championship just sticks to us. But yeah, it was good to see Obafemi in this position.
Just to follow up on that last comment, of the 18 different people, different wrestlers that have held the North American Championship, nine of them have been black. So that's 50%. 50%. Mm-hmm. Half of the people who have won it have been black. So, you know, there's a reason why I definitely always call it the African American Championship. Mm-hmm. And to move on from that, but kind of, you know, stay in the same lane. What's been interesting, and coming away from your comments as well, Mix, in terms of the way they're using Obafemi right now, what's been interesting is I saw a comment from, I believe it was Bully Ray in the week, Busted Open Radio. And I think, I'm not sure how to take this, but it felt as if he was kind of playing down the North American Championship and the way it's used. But at the same time, he said what it actually is. So he basically said, the North American Championship just feels like, you know, just about that they put on the next person. And I'm like, yeah, like that's the point. I don't know what he was trying to get at, but I'm just like, that's the whole point. So for you to say, you know, that, you know, they're putting it on Obafemi kind of out of nowhere, it was way too soon to kind of even think to find a way to put the NXT championship on him. Way too soon for that. And we've seen the likes of a Carmelo Hayes before him, who, you know, won the breakout tournament. He didn't win his match. I think it was against Adam Cole that he had it when he cashed in his contract. But then obviously the first championship he's winning is the North American. Look where he is now. Others like Keith Lee and Shane Strickland. Wes Lee needed his run as North American champion to get to where he's at now, for us to, you know, look at him the way that we do now. We've seen the likes of a Leon Ruff, who kind of came out of nowhere and did what he did as well. And that threw him to the high stratosphere for a few months or whatever else. So I think for me, you know, as you said, it's perfect that they've done it the way they have. Dragon Lee, when you look at it in terms of a time span, it feels as it should feel as though it was a transitional champion, but he really wasn't. I think he did a lot with it. He made it work for him, but I think it was a decent time as well to kind of take it away from him. He's now going to, you know, he's going to be on SmackDown full time. It's time for someone else to take it on. And to have a guy, the stature, the intensity, the power of Obafemi, it's almost like, what would you do with him for the next few weeks or months if he didn't do something like this? Like, what would he have done? Gone through guys like Axiom and, you know, Nathan Fraser maybe, and all the rest of it. But as you said, These guys are smaller guys. Of course, he's going to go through them. So it's now going to be very interesting to see who his opponents will be as he holds this North American Championship. Gerard, do you have any idea who you think or how NXT should kind of hand over Femi as North American Champion?
Well, I think one of the things that's interesting is Obafemi is what Odyssey Jones was supposed to be. And you remember Odyssey Jones won the NXT breakout tournament. And then shortly thereafter. Final. Yeah. Who did he lose to then? I thought he won it.
Carmelo. Did he win it?
No. I thought he won it. But
I swear it's Carmelo that beat him.
Was it? Okay.
I think he was in Carmelo's. Yeah.
I'm sure it was. Because that was the last one. That was the last one.
I'm going to figure this out to be sure.
Double check.
Yeah.
Double check, but I'm sure.
Okay.
Odyssey Jones got injured anyway. So, yeah, that's what.
Yeah, so he did beat Odyssey Jones. You guys are right. But I still say that this is who Odyssey Jones was supposed to be. And so with that said, how they should handle him, I mean, he has to dominate at this point. Like, this isn't going to be let him have some really close matches with people that he should not be fighting. No, he needs to dominate. I mean, and dominate for probably a good 6 months, you know, before somebody can come close. Because right now, I mean, in terms of thinking of who can come close, most of the people that could probably come close to having a really competitive match with him were either in the breakout tournament or somewhere on Level Up, but they are not on regular NXT TV. I'm thinking of the Tavion Heights, I'm thinking of the Keanu Carters. I'm thinking of these kinds of guys who have similar builds, who have similar athletic backgrounds, but to put him in there with, you know, smaller guys just doesn't make sense, you know? What I also think this does is this kind of continues this hybrid thought that NXT has between the NXT Black and Gold and NXT 2.0, which is to have someone new who is not on the main roster hold on to this championship. Think about it. Two of the last three champions were from the main roster, whether that is Dominic Mysterio or Dragon Lee. So at this point, it is important to get it back in the hands of somebody who is NXT. So in terms of how this run should go, it should be arguably one of the most dominant runs we've seen. And I say dominant, not like Wesley dominant, you know, hold it for 270 some odd days. I mean dominant in nobody can touch this guy. And even though he's new, you know, if somebody gets close to touching him, it's a learning experience. So we get to see.
I
shudder to use this word, but you guys will understand the sentiment behind it. Almost like a Goldberg-esque kind of run. Okay. Just in terms of domination, in terms of, okay, we can't wait. You know who? Baron Corbin, when he first came to NXT, had a run like that, where the crowd was counting, how long is this match going to be? You know, and they'd count to like 35 before the match was over. A dominant run like that, I think, is what he needs, which will give him the opportunity to still gain some skills, but make him a feared competitor as the NXT North American champion.
Do you think that type of run, the whole dominance, whether it be, you know, the amount of time, like short matches or, you know, matches where he's just throwing people around, all that kind of stuff, if that lasts too long, do you think that there's a possibility of him finding himself in a dangerous place when it comes to, you know, what we do next? Where does he go from here type of situation?
I think that lasts for a period that's long enough to allow him to develop skills behind the scenes so that if he ends up in a match with someone who is more skilled that requires them going 15, 20 minutes, that he's got some things to show us. You know what I mean? So that he doesn't get pigeonholed as the normal big man, right? Because the thing that NXT has shown us is almost all of their big men are hybrids, whether it's Keith Lee or Dijak or now Josh Briggs. Those guys are all hybrid kinds of guys. who can, you know, stand and give you a choke slam, but they can also fly over the top rope if necessary. Mm. I don't know if we need Obafemi to fly over the top rope right now,
no.
But I do think we need to give him time to be able to get the kinds of skills that would be required. God forbid if he ended up in a match against, I don't know, Dijak, right? Like if you end up in a match with Dijak, those are two large guys, but Dijak has the ability to do so much that you don't want Dijak to feel like he has to dumb himself down if he's going to be in the ring with Obafemi.
What's good about Obafemi actually is the fact that he isn't necessarily a hybrid to the level that we're saying in terms of a Keith Lee and Dijak and those kind of guys. It's actually nice that he is just straight up powerful. He's quick for his size as well, which definitely helps. But the intensity for me is that part that makes him stand out massively. We mentioned Dijak and a few others. Mex, do you think there are any other people? Because in my mind, and I don't want to speak too far ahead. I don't want to, he's only just won it last week. I don't want to think about him losing it. But in my mind, the only people that I can think of who would beat him have been guys who have been very close, or if not in the NXT title picture. So the likes of Dijak, Corbin, Bron Breakker, guys like that, who it would feel as though they have to kind of come down the card in order to, beat Obafemi. Do you think that could cause a problem for the roster of NXT?
Sorry, as in they would need to, someone lesser than will have to beat him. Is that what you mean?
Not lesser than him, but just someone who's currently above the card, who is in that kind of NXT title picture, would have to kind of come down in order to, in order to beat Obafemi. Because I can't think of anyone who is on the same level or lower than him on the card or whatever it is that could be. Maybe a Josh Briggs is probably the only person I can think of that would make all the sense.
I mean, that's a good shout. And obviously Briggs has made it clear that he wants to do some single stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think with Obafemi, and I guess we tend to always say this when it comes to someone of, big stature and all of that kind of stuff. But if they do something like a NXT Stand and Deliver ladder match, WrestleMania weekend, that could be a way to throw him in amongst other guys of note that they want to get on that card and have a new champion and take the belt off him that way. Not that it needs to be short-lived or anything, but that is just one way of doing it. I think for now, it seems like he definitely just probably needs to get more reps in. The matches will be good. Like I said, before him winning this title, he probably hasn't had more than 5 matches on NXT TV, which is incredible amount of time to win the title in. So matches probably first. Some will probably come across in a way of a squash or something like that. But like Gerard said, as long as it doesn't become repetitive and then he just becomes known as, the guy that squashes people, then you can stick him in a story with a Baron Corbin. Like, ultimately, that's what Baron Corbin's down there to do, in NXT to do, help some of the younger talent. Baron Corbin, Josh Briggs and Obafemi program already sounds like a very good idea. Whether Josh Briggs wins in the end or not, it just sounds like, someone that's striving for single success. You've now just watched someone come and do this in 5 matches, thing. That's already a crisis of confidence kind of thing. And then, of course, there's other talents there. It looks like, Nathan Fraser right now is involved in the tag tournament, the Dusty, but he could always be, a good challenger. Lexus King, that's someone that they're obviously using at the minute. So, yeah, there's people. In terms of people coming down, Dragunov, if he loses to Trick, I don't expect him to kind of be in and around that title. I think him and Bron Breakker are in a bit of a holding pattern to when they can have see an opportunity to go up. Carmelo's already gone up, basically.
Right.
He's pulling double duty. So, yeah, that's really the main event scene. And then Trick is obviously probably going to be champion very soon. So, everyone else is probably fair game.
It's going to be an interesting run for Obafemi to see how it's done, who he comes up against, and how long he's actually going to hold it. Moving over to Saturday, Saturday, as I said, you know, had so many things going on. We had Battle in the Valley, New Japan, Battle in the Valley, AEW Collision as normal. But then, of course, we had Battle of the Belts as well. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that I guess most people were probably, you know, interested in, whether they watched it or not, found clips afterwards, whatever it is, the thing, I think the main talking point for Saturday was definitely TNA. Now back to TNA, Hard to Kill. We were speaking of Obafemi as a new champion, but the one person who no one expected, no one was talking about.
Nobody at all
was talking about it in the lead up to Hard to Kill. We were talking about what's Trinity going to do, where she's going to end up, what's the outcome of the match going to be. It might give us an indication whether she's staying or going to WWE. Who's this new this new signing where they were talking about worlds are going to collide, blah, 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 blah. But one thing that happened, I literally had me jumping out of my seat. I'm just that guy. Moose became the new TNA world champion, beating Alex Shelley. Alex Shelley had I believe it's the third longest run as the TNA stroke Impact world champion, around about 187 days, I think it was. Moose defeated Alex Shelley. It was a very interesting match because it felt as though Shelley, you know, dominated most of the match. But Moose came out with the spear and won the match. Gerard, in the lead up to this PLE, I was going to say pay-per-view, but let me correct myself.
Yes, PLE. Yes. New era.
At any point, did you even think about Moose's match?
No. just absolutely not. Like, it was, there was so much, and this goes back to one of the things that I've been saying for the last couple of weeks relative to Trinity, and everybody's talking about, should she stay, should she go? Some people are like, why isn't she on the flyer for the Philly event in March, and blah, blah, blah. Trinity has been the focal point of that company. And I think people have to acknowledge that. And this is not just because we talk about Black wrestling. No. Whether you're talking about women's wrestling, whether you're talking about Impact or TNA in general, the conversation has been about Trinity. Mm-hmm. So the fact and the fact that none of us were thinking about that world title match, and that we saw that the world title match was the main event, probably just because that's what you're supposed to do. That says everything you need to know about where the world title fit in the world that belongs to Trinity. With that said, Moose, even when I heard Moose was getting a title shot, it just went one ear and out the other. It was just like, okay. Because honestly, Moose hadn't been doing an awful lot in TNA or Impact since he re-signed. It was like he re-signed and then he just started chilling, basically. Him winning this championship says an awful lot about TNA and their new direction. If you think about it, first of all, this is probably a great time to just salute TNA for what they have done in this. First of all, 2023, easily one of their biggest years. The fact that they went on a rebranding campaign and got everybody interested, that's incredible.
Massive.
That is incredible. I mean, to the point where people have been talking about TNA as much, if not more, than AEW. And certainly they've been talking about TNA in a more positive light. So this night was all about what is the new direction of this company that reassumes its old name. And while everybody was wondering what would happen on the Trinity front, we have a new world champion in Moose. And there's a lot to be said for that. Moose is a guy who many don't give his props to. A guy who was clearly a TNA Impact guy for life. He had the opportunity when his contract ended a couple of years ago to make the jump, and he didn't do it. He believes in TNA and all of those things. So seeing him, you know, literally come from the sport of football, obviously do a little bit of time in Ring of Honor, but really make his stint in TNA and do this and now be recognized once again as a world champion. It's significant. It's massive. if people don't remember, he held that world title during the pandemic. And one of the things that he said that got a lot of people up in arms, he was literally challenging Roman Reigns and calling himself the head of the table, calling himself the best world champion. And I think everybody just kind of dismissed it. All right. With that said, Moose held that title in front of nobody. Now he gets the chance to hold the title during arguably the most significant time in the reign of in the history of this company, with this rebrand of TNA, all the new money behind it. The look in the palms in Vegas was incredible. That audience looked amazing. Like, there's money there now. So to have Moose as the face of this brand holding the world title, a major statement by TNA.
And I think for me, that's the part that made me stand up a little bit. It's because, you know, we're in this new era of TNA and they put the new championship on Moose. That tells you everything you need to know. Whereas we were talking about Trinity last week and we were saying, you know, it's important. It's probably important that, you know, TNA keep the Knockouts Championship on her and, you know, during this new era and all the rest of it. But they've done it with Moose. And we talk about the fact that he re-signed, and I was disappointed. I was like, mate, why? He had the chance to go to WWE, blah, blah, blah. And a few months following, you know, as you said, Gerard, he wasn't doing much, kind of just running around with Brian Myers, not really doing, you know, anything of any real significance. But the thing, when I look back at how we got to that point, you know, in terms of the opportunity to face Alex Shelley, he won the Freestyle Fired briefcase and ended up with the opportunity to face the Impact champion. And since then, he's just been on this streak of kind of, you know, this dominance. And it's not necessarily in the ring, but just kind of asserting himself again as a true player in TNA. And of course, him winning the championship has set that, you know, set that in stone. And at the start of the PLE as well, you know, they made this new the new name for their faction, the System, way better than the Wrestling Gods or whatever it was before, and some long 5-word name and all the rest of it. But this, when I think it was Eddie Edwards that said the two words, I was like, that sounds like a good name. And then they said it straight after. Obviously, that's their new name. So for me, I'm very excited to see what happens when it comes to Moose. Mix, I know that for you, you know, you've said before on numerous occasions, you don't watch Impact TNA week to week. So when you saw this happen, how did you feel when you saw that Moose became the champion?
I thought it was good in the sense of he is the chosen one to lead them into this new, you know, era of, I guess, them getting the name back and all of that kind of stuff. People are going to be watching TNA and this particular product more than ever, you know, while this is all kind of new shiny toy, you know, stuff again. You've already said it with Moose. It's, for me, it was more of a disappointment that, you know, I want to see you challenge yourself. I want to see, I will still argue, I want to see you step out of that comfort zone and challenge yourself and do something else. Moose in ring, Moose is a very, very good wrestler. He's very competent. I don't think he gets enough or spoken, you know, in the same circles as some of the other people we speak about in regards to his in-ring ability and things of that nature. It's just, for me, like I was saying last week with Trinity, what differences, what new things can we see now from this run? What haven't we seen before? And more than ever, there is, you know, imports from New Japan coming in. You know, we've seen the likes of his first challenger, it seems to be in Nick Nemeth, formerly known as Dolph Ziggler, knocking on the door. So he's got a few, you know, new contenders and things like that, new names that can pop up. So yeah, I'm happy to see him get this shot again. And like I said, the timing is really right. And, you know, all eyes are going to be on him to kind of carry the company within this first bit of its new name and stuff like that. But yeah, I just really want to see something different for Moose. I think that's my main thing.
Going back to his previous run as the champion, He obviously did the whole thing of facing Kenny Omega. And, you know, with the AEW and the Impact Championship on the line and all the rest of it. And we all saw it as an opportunity for, you know, AEW Impact to kind of put Moose on the map. You know, obviously Kenny Omega is Kenny Omega and all the rest of it. But obviously, ultimately, as good as he was in the match, he ended up losing and kind of, you know, kind of slipped into oblivion after that. Do you feel as though now with the former Dolph Ziggler Nick Nemeth kind of breathing down his neck within seconds of him winning the championship, do we think that this is a chance for TNA to give Moose something to kind of put on his CV, I beat Nick Nemeth, or will Nick Nemeth become the TNA champion?
Like, it's a funny one. It's almost like the Naomi conversation, the Trinity conversation that we had last year. Like, Ziggler is undoubtedly the biggest star they have now. I don't care that, you know, Okada and Ospreay pop their head in there every now and again. Right. Ziggler is the biggest star. Nick Nemeth is the biggest star. So the temptation to give him the big title, the new, fresh and beautiful new title, is going to be there. And I hope, that's the one thing I didn't say before, I hope Moose isn't going to be used as some transitional champion to get this title onto Nick Nemeth. Because, yeah, that won't help his stock. Like you said, he's been pretty quiet before this opportunity came. He took, you know, took the opportunity with two hands. If they now use him as transition, I don't think that would be great. But I kind of trust TNA that they won't, at least not like at the first opportunity anyway. Yeah, maybe, you know, Nick will have to work his way up, you know, before he gets that opportunity sort of thing. But you can't lie, the temptation will be there to do it. It's if, you know, I guess maybe through Moose's performances and other people kind of pulling the slack as well, they won't necessarily need to. If things aren't going so good, even just business-wise, you never know. Like, he's there now, so it's like, you pull the trigger, Nick Nemeth is champion. Let's hope, everything being equal, they don't have to kind of be forced into that situation.
So following Hard to Kill, the following day, they recorded Snake Eyes. I believe that's going to be aired on Thursday. And Moose, alongside Brian Myers, Eddie Edwards, takes on the Motor City Machine Guns and Okada. As we've said, you know, we've already got your Nick Nemeth breathing down his neck. I don't know what the result of the six-man tag was, but just to have those guys literally within, you know, less than 24 hours of you winning that championship says a lot. For me, when it comes to this run for Moose, I think they have to use him in the same way they've used Josh Alexander, even while Josh Alexander hasn't been champion. Josh Alexander's basically taken on everyone, whether he's won or lost, he's taken on the biggest names, all the rest of it. He got a win over Alex Hammerstone at Hard to Kill. Great match. Obviously, Hammerstone coming from MLW with the name that he is and all the rest of it. I feel as though TNA, in the smallest way, have to go with, or to the minimum, should I say, have to go with that type of approach with Moose as champion, even as a heel, whether it's, you know, the system get involved, whether it's disqualifications, blah, 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 whatever. But he has to have these names on his CV for a while. 3-4 months, maybe, probably even longer, but we'll see. Gerard, who do you feel around this roster can kind of, who else is there who can kind of challenge Moose for this championship?
I mean, there are plenty of people. You know, you got Josh Alexander, as you mentioned, you know, and a number of other really prominent names. And I mean, there are new names that are showing up, obviously, in TNA. Alex Hammerstone would, I think, be a very interesting name, you know, once he gets some more wins under his belt. There's always a potential rematch from Alex Shelley. You know, you've got some of the TNA originals like Frankie Kazarian and Eric Young. I mean, you've got people that are there. The problem is, I don't think we're getting a long reign from Moose. I don't see Moose getting past Nick Nemeth. Nick Nemeth. I don't. And there's a couple of things. First of all, I think one of the reasons Moose won this championship, obviously it's an opportunity for a new direction. TNA made a lot of announcements Saturday night. One of them is that they're partnering with the NFL Alumni Health, which I think is important. Of course, Moose being a former NFL player, that makes sense, at least for a short term. But let's think about Nick Nemeth for a second. Here's a guy who it's been a long time since he's held a world championship. And even though, you know, he's 20 years into the game, in terms of recognizable figures, recognizable names, you know, this gave TNA an even bigger shot in the arm in terms of being able to sign him, have him as part of the company. I don't honestly see how he doesn't become your world champion. To me, this is a carbon copy of Trinity. It's a carbon copy. I mean, of all of the people who were released during that big set of releases for WWE, his name was the name everybody went, oh, my God, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. You know, so his appearance over in New Japan at Wrestle Kingdom, big deal. Then him coming over to TNA and now, you know, breaking things out and he signed to TNA and he's that guy. There's no way they don't put the world title on him. No way. Absolutely. To me, and this is going to sound controversial, especially on this show, but it's a bigger mistake for them not to put a title on him than it is for them to have Moose have a long reign. I think if anything, I mean, if anything, Moose can win that title back, you know, a few months down the road. Okay. But think about this. We're going into WrestleMania season. Is Moose going to get people to turn the channel or is Nick Nemeth?
Facts.
I mean, so this is one of those things. I think we should enjoy the fact that Moose won this title during TNA's first, you know, relaunch and like all the things. Enjoy every bit of it. But the fact that Moose, the fact that we forgot Moose was in the main event to begin with, okay? We forgot. Most of us probably would have turned that thing off after Trinity if we hadn't paid our hard-earned money to watch the whole event, right? So this is not a knock to Moose, but Moose is going to have to do an awful lot more for us to go, that's our guy. Right now, we're cheering for him because he looks like us. And we're cheering for everything black.
It's Fox. It's Fox.
We're cheering for everything black. We want you to succeed. But it does not make good business sense for Nick Nemeth to be signed. Now, if Nick Nemeth just showed up once or twice in TNA and did a random date, okay, don't put the belt on him. But this man ripped his shirt off to say, I am TNA. That man's your world champion. He's your world champion. If for nothing else, it literally, this is Trinity carbon copy. Trinity didn't get to have that world title reign she was supposed to. So what do? You let her have it there in TNA.
Of course.
Nick Nemeth, exact same thing. Especially now, because now he's the worldwide name. He can get on these big TV shows. He's got the comedy tour. He's got all of these things. And people will still recognize him from his WWE days.
Of course.
It's all the reasons why he should be the world. And he can still go. Mm. Let me tell you something. When you watch, go back and you watch those go-home shots with him coming in that ring, staring Moose down, having that moment, I noticed something. I don't know if anybody else caught it, but it looked a whole lot like Black and Gold NXT. The vibe, the way the ropes looked, the energy. Way it was shot, the energy of it. That was 2018-2019 NXT. And if Nick Nemeth is leading that, there's no way you can put Moose as the face of that long term. No way. I love you, Moose. I'm glad for what you did for us. I appreciate it. But If Moose makes it, there's no way Moose is world champion from now through April. No way.
Damn. I mean, he could be.
and they do it at, you know, like last year they had like a kind of Worlds Collide show.
Yeah, the Multiverse with, United.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I stupidly, because it clashed with something else when I went to WrestleMania last year. That's why I didn't get to go to that show. If the main event of that show this year is Moose versus Nick Nemeth for the world title, guys, I will be there.
Yeah, make sense.
But if, honestly speaking, if it's Moose versus someone else, I probably don't go.
Yeah. That's
and
very true.
I guess that backs up what Gerard's saying.
This is what I'm saying.
So you both just destroyed my hopes and dreams. But you know,
I mean, and to Mex's point, maybe they stretch it out, right? So maybe it doesn't happen at whatever their February event is, right? Maybe they stretch this thing out, because remember, Trinity got there late May, early June. She had at least one event where she had a tag match and things like that. But by the time we got to July and Slammiversary, she's fighting for the world title. By the time we get to March, whether they do it at Multiverse United or the event that's before that, if they do it in Philly, I don't know where they're going to do it. But Nick Nemeth's your world champion.
Given all the facts and everything else that you've kind of put out there, you know, it makes complete sense. Especially when you said, you know, when it comes to WrestleMania weekend, you know, Moose as the champion against just someone doesn't do anything. And whether that and for me, my only hope now is what Mex said. If Moose goes in as champion and he faces Nick Nemeth, he's not winning. Sure. He's not winning.
No.
That's the only hope for me in terms of, you know, Moose having a decent run before being beaten by Nick Nemeth. And that's definitely on the cards. That loss is happening. It would be very silly for them not to do that. And I think for me, the only other hope then is that, you know, obviously Nick Nemeth is, as you said, showed up in New Japan. He's already kind of put out a few dates for other places he's going to be in. So maybe it's too early to kind of throw, you know, TNA to throw a world championship on him and expect him to be there every week or whatever it is. Or, you know, I know they film stuff like chunks of 4 weeks in like 1 day, 2 days. But even that may be too much to ask of him at this moment. He does his little tours. He goes here, there and everywhere. And then come WrestleMania weekend or within April, he becomes champion. I'd be okay. I'd be okay if it happens at like the end of February. I'll be upset. It would make sense.
February, right?
You know what I mean? It would make sense based on the facts and all the rest of it. And I've already said from the second that I saw Nick Nemeth show up in New Japan a couple of weeks ago, I said straight away, 2024 is going to be his year. In a way, I'm almost upset that WWE didn't release him a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because
that's,
they
that's
used
down
him.
To him. That's down to him.
Yeah, true. Yeah. They used him as just, you know, more or less like a jobber the last, you know, year or two or whatever.
Gatekeeper.
It is. Yeah. And it would have been nice for him to kind of spread his wings, go somewhere else, do the Drew, you know what I mean, and kind of disappear, do things here, there, and everywhere, and then come back. But you know, and I'm expecting that same thing for Ali as well, Mustafa Ali. This year is going to be incredible, especially for those two.
You mentioned Ali. I just dropped this in there. It was earlier today that a lot of like the independent promoters are saying that since Ali has been announced on their shows, they're seeing like record profits.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Progress is already sold out.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah,
it's mad, and I'm not surprised in the slightest. I've always said, and I will say this as well, like both Nemeth and Ali have probably been two of my favorite wrestlers over the last few years, like by a mile. And I've always been so upset in how underused they have been. So for me, I'm just expecting crazy things to happen. I feel as though the general consensus is a very similar thing when for me personally as well, is that these guys have been so misused that people are just like, you know, chomping at the bit and salivating at the mouth to see what they do in 2024. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with them. Let's move on very quickly. There's so much to talk about and there's so little time left. But Trinity obviously was the talking point of Hard to Kill before, you know, leading up to the event and all the rest of it. There's been talks of her returning to WWE. Her contract supposedly up mid-January with TNA. And obviously all eyes were on the result of her versus Jordan Grace. She ended up losing the match. There's been a fan video that's been going around where after the match, you know, it seemed as though she waved to the fans almost to say goodbye. But within 24 hours of that happening, she's issued a rematch or asking for a rematch via X with Jordan Grace. Gerard, what are your feelings when it comes to this? Is this a red herring? Are we still going to see her? Could she still stay with TNA but still turn up at the Royal Rumble? Like, what is going on here?
I think we're in unprecedented times. And so I love the fact that she put out there the, you know, asking for a rematch. She certainly should deserve it. And I'll tell you what I love even more. I'd love for her to win it. Right. Like, I'd love for her to win and throw everybody off, you know, whether that'll happen or not. I don't know. You know, there's still so many things to try to figure out. Will she show up at these tapings? When will this rematch happen? If it happens, you know, I don't know. I don't know. But I do think the fact that she mentioned the rematch was fantastic, because it already threw everybody off, you know, because everybody was like, okay, that's her swan song. She's out of here. As opposed to her waving at the fans just to say, thank you for supporting me tonight. I appreciate it. Not thank you for supporting me forever. I'm out of here, you know? Whenever they announce this rematch, because she's more than deserving, that could tell us a lot. If said rematch happens, if the date for that is after the Royal Rumble, that gets really interesting. You know what I mean? Because I have to go back and look at what their next set of events are. But really, if you're talking, you know, Royal Rumble is a week from this Saturday.
Week and a half.
So if the rematch doesn't happen on this week's show or next week's show, I don't know if we should expect her at the Royal Rumble. You know what I mean? You know, if the rematch is going to happen. Now, the flip side is, if this rematch is to happen, it's after Rumble, and then she still shows up. That gets even more complicated and fun. Like, is she showing up as a part of the TNA roster? Is she, you know, no longer signed? Like, what's going to happen? I don't know. But I like the fact that there's actually mystery connected to this. And then TNA made a ton of announcements Saturday night, including a partnership with AAA that they're continuing. And they talked. And I thought what Scott D'Amore said was very interesting, because he talked about how the pro wrestling business is better when we all work together. And I was like, I don't remember a head of an organization saying that on a premium live event or publicly, not on some podcast or not on, you know, some news article or a scrum. This is a big deal. So if there is some secret working relationship, perhaps with WWE, that allows her to go back and forth, that too would be interesting. This is all very, very interesting stuff.
Mex, what's your ideal scenario when it comes to Trinity?
My ideal scenario would have been to stick around, to stay in TNA at least for, you know, make it a year at least. Or, you know, even with this rematch thing, I saw that and I thought, what would have been great is if she won on the weekend. And then Jordan Grace asked for the weekend. Sorry, asked for the rematch. And if they were going to do the title switch, then they do it then, whenever the rematch is going to take place. That, again, would have thrown people off. But, yeah, I think it's good that she has the rematch. It's not just, you know, you stare up at the lights, count to three, and then she's out of there sort of thing. It helps to put over the belt, in my opinion. Like, you know, I still want a piece of this, and then if I lose the rematch, then, you know, fair enough, then I might leave, if that's whatever that's the case. And I think protecting the integrity of the title is important as well. So yeah, I think I would have liked her to stick around. My fear is that when she comes to WWE, if she comes to WWE, is what are we doing with her? Where is she going? I was talking to some friends last week, and I thought, well, Bloodline look like they're more or less going to be done by Mania, maybe. Maybe you keep Solo with Paul Heyman. Jimmy with this more cartoonish character he's portraying, if you stick his wife by his side and she kind of whips him into shape. That could be interesting as something they haven't done before, something a bit different. But of course, you want her to continue, you know, the gold chase and stuff like that. So it's just very hard to see where that could come from, because we're probably going to get into a season now where we could be looking at post-Mania, Bayley as a new champion, Becky Lynch as a new champion, or even Rhea retaining, like, and there's only those two singles titles, or one, depending what show you get put on. So, we have to see. We might have to wait it out a bit. But I would like to think they treat her as a big star when she comes back, because she's proven that she can hold that position.
Very true, very true. It's been interesting. There's so many things, both, you know, leading up to Hard to Kill, you know, when this announcement that Triple H was going to make at one point, you know, there were so many things that looked like it was going to be a WWE TNA thing because of so many different red herrings and stuff. You know, we've seen this whole thing with CM Punk where they said, no, we're not signing, we don't even want him. Next thing you know, a couple of weeks later, he turns up at Survivor Series. You know, there's been talks of Mercedes Moné returning to WWE. People are thinking they're doing a very similar thing with her when it comes to, you know, saying nothing, but then she just turns up. She was also at Hard to Kill watching Trinity alongside Bayley up in the rafters and hood and sunglasses and all the rest of it, trying to disguise themselves. Didn't work. You know, so what I'm saying is it's all very interesting that, you know, there is still this speculation, but yet, because of these little red herrings, because we've seen this wave goodbye, because we've then seen her asking for a rematch, her contracts up mid-January, Royal Rumble's in 11 days. Like, there are so many things that kind of put you in a position where you cannot predict what's going to happen next. And like, in a way, I'm actually loving the fact that whatever happens, that the powers that be, would be TNA, would be Trinity, have all played us like idiots the whole way through. And I'm not going to actually love it. I actually love the fact that they're kind of using their strengths to keep us guessing, to keep us asking the questions, to keep us, you know, watching the dirt sheets and the news reels and the websites and all this kind of stuff. And we're still talking about it every single week. For me, that's the beauty of pro wrestling, especially in 2024, because, wow. Yeah. There's just so much things to talk about. The next thing to talk about, where we kind of don't know what's going on and who done it. It's a who done it situation. We're still in the middle of it. It's this whole thing with Trick and Mello on NXT. So of course, you know, we saw that Trick hasn't had his chance to face Ilya Dragunov. Trick decided to get involved, had him face Grayson Waller with his number one contendership on the line. Trick came out of that unscathed, unfortunately for him. But then Carmelo's inserted himself again and has put them both in the Dusty Classic. So they'll be teaming up as the Trick Mello gang in the Dusty Classic. We've also seen, of course, Mello also on SmackDown as well. So what we've seen, they face Idris Onofre and Malik Blade in the first round match, which is tonight on NXT. Are they going all the way? Do they lose tonight because someone messed up somewhere? And that's where we hopefully get this explosion that we've been waiting for. Gerard, what are you expecting for tonight's match with Trick and Mello?
It's hard to call this one. I have been saying that we get Trick. At first I said Trick Mello at Stand and Deliver. But then once Mello debuted on SmackDown and made it to the second round, the semifinals of that number one contenders title tournament for the U.S. title, I said, this guy belongs on SmackDown. It's evident. It's clear. So do we extend this all the way till March or April? To me, and this is what's tough, right? Should they break up tonight after this tag match? Because here's the other unfortunate thing. I'd hate for a team like Malik and Idris to get caught up in this crossfire when they've been working so hard to be recognized as a, you know, standout tag team. So to me, there's the case that could be made that, you know, tonight is the implosion, because Mello could say, you mean we can't even beat this team? and let the sparks fly, you know? Now, if that doesn't happen, then we know they're going to the finals, and then at Vengeance Day, it falls all the way apart. So it's one of those two places. Personally, I'd like to see it start tonight so that we can get to Vengeance Day, so that Melo can fully devote himself to SmackDown, and now we can lead ourselves to Trick versus Dragunov at Stand and Deliver. Because at this particular point, with Melo already debuting on SmackDown, dragging it out doesn't help us at all.
Right.
And the fact that we didn't get Trick versus Dragunov at New Year's Evil, put it on the big stage of Stand and Deliver, let it be the moment for Trick Williams. So my vote is that they break up tonight and lead us into Vengeance Day.
Vengeance Day is on February the 4th, which is what, 3 weeks away from now? So, you know, it could easily happen that way. It would be great for it to happen that way, as you said, you know, to see then Trick Williams move on to Dragunov for Stand and Deliver. But does it, Mex, do you feel it has to be a thing where they break up tonight, or, you know, at least lose the match tonight? Or do they go all the way and the breakup or the implosion happens at Vengeance Day in this finals, in the tournament final?
I think
messing up a little bit. I think we got you. No?
Yeah.
Can you guys hear me?
Now we can, yes.
Got you now.
I was saying, for me, they should lose tonight to Malik Blade.
I think we stopped into
there's a profound point that he's making right now.
I know that's the worst part.
We're like,
what is going on? But you know, to keep the conversation going, for me, I feel as though it is definitely best for them to have some kind of, you know, obvious implosion or obvious disagreement or something like that happen tonight. And I say that not necessarily for it's best for the story in general. I don't think it actually matters whether it's now or in the final. For me, it's like what you said. For me, I'm more concerned for Blade and Anofe.
Yes,
that's what it is for me. It's more that than anything else. I don't want them to be, you know, as you said, you know, the fodder for what's going on, and then they can't, you know, do their thing or show how good they are or how much better they are now and all the rest of it. I mean, we've seen a lot of them in backstage for the last few weeks as well.
Right.
They've had a few matches where they were very, very good as well. So to see them go a good distance, at least reach the semi-final, and look very strong enough for the final, for me is important. As I said, it's not important for the story whether this implosion happens, you know, tonight or in the final. But more than anything, it's my concern would be with Inofe and Blade. Mex, let's go back to you for your point and what you were saying about whether it should happen tonight or at the final.
Yeah, sorry about that. I think, again, we don't want to sacrifice Malik and Inofe. Like, I feel like they're a tag team in a tag team tournament. So I would like to see them progress. And before now, they haven't really done much of anything for a while. So, you know, just get them on TV, let them have an opportunity. For me, I'm beginning to get a bit tired of this story. And I think the main reason is because it is slowly making Trick look like an idiot.
Yeah.
Like, all the signs are there to see at least a behavioral change in Carmelo Hayes. He had a match against, who was it the other day when Carmelo put his opportunity on the line, his number one contendership on the
line? Grayson Waller.
Against Grayson Waller.
Against Grayson Waller. And after the match, like, you could see, like, Carmelo was notably not happy that he won. What I mean? Like, doesn't he, you know, this is, I know, blurring the lines of reality and that, but it's like, Trick can watch a TV show back and see that his mate isn't happy. You see what I mean?
Right.
So I don't like that we're trying to stretch it so far now to the point where like, you know, Trick is losing brain cells. I don't like that. Like, we have to find other ways to kind of get there quicker or whatever the case may be. The final of the Dusties at Vengeance Day, right?
Right.
I believe
right.
so. Yeah.
It is.
We'll have the other two matches tonight, and then the two semifinals would then be next week, and then Vengeance Day is Friday.
I remember back to when Roderick Strong turned on Pete Dunne, I think it was, at the pay-per-view when he joined on the Undisputed Era. Mm-hmm. I mean, there could be a big kind of implosion like that at the pay-per-view to really cement the turn or whatever the case is. Mm-hmm. I just think that you should use that match, that stage, to do the match. And then if we're moving on to Stand and Deliver, that's the title match. I want to see them hurry up with this at this point. Carmelo's already got one foot out the door with no mention of Trick on main roster. So let's kind of just get there more organically rather than, like I say, we're at the mercy here of making Trick look a bit silly.
Can I piggyback on that real quick? Because you said something, Mex, that I hadn't thought about until you said it. You know, ever since we met Trick Williams a couple of years ago, he was always this super street savvy kind of guy. Mm-hmm. So what street savvy guy can't see that his homeboy is playing him, right?
Yeah.
Like, so we've already been through the moments where he thought about it like, is he, isn't he, is he? At some point you got, no, look, I already see what you're doing. This is crazy. Enough's enough. You know, that's why it has to happen sooner than later. Or to Max's point, you're actually diminishing the Trick Williams character because we like him because he's street savvy, he's smooth, he's all these things. He, you know, he just had that promo a couple of weeks ago where he went through all the Trick names, you know, Trick Willie, Trick this, you know, Trick James, all that stuff. You can't do that and then get fooled by your best friend like this,
right?
Where it's obvious to the rest of the world and not you. So there's a lot of reasons why this needs to end tonight.
And here's a third scenario that I didn't even think about, but for me, it actually now makes even more sense. Obviously, Vengeance Day is in a couple of weeks. At the moment, we've got no Ilya Dragunov. I can't think of, and as far as I understand, his injury is kayfabe. I can't see why, there would be no Dragunov at Vengeance Day. So for me, I'm actually seeing it being a case of the breakup or split or something happens tonight. They lose the match in some way. It starts off something. There's still this kind of, you know, Trick probably doesn't know what's going on necessarily, but, you know, we all see it here on TV, as we're watching TV. But then when Trick faces Dragunov at Vengeance Day, that's when Carmelo will show his true colors. I feel as though that might be the way it's going to happen. For me, as we've said, with Carmelo already with one foot in the door when it comes to SmackDown, it needs to happen, and the match between him and Trick needs to happen very, very soon, very, very soon, almost, you know, within the next couple of weeks or whatever. But I'm not sure we have Vengeance Day without Dragunov, and if we do have Vengeance Day with Dragunov, it has to be with Trick. It would make no sense in any other way. So it's going to be very intriguing to see how this works. Another question, as we said, you know, we've seen Melo with one foot in the door on SmackDown. Is this the best way to introduce Melo into this whole thing? Because it felt correct with the tournament, but now he kind of just showed up. Like, what?
So I liked the fact that he was there to ask to be in the Royal Rumble. That's ultimately why he was there, and then these guys started running their mouth. Grayson Waller's obviously got a bad record against Melo, so he nominated Austin Theory, and even with that match, hopefully those guys are doing all right after the rough tumble that they took.
I believe they were fine.
I think it's just a thing where we're doing it kind of as organically as possible. You don't want to take the approach of, right, this is the new big star, he's here now, blah, blah, blah. Everyone love this guy by force.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
We've seen that backfire before. And at the same time, you don't want to do more of a, or should I say, there's the Odyssey Jones approach. There's the Zion Quinn approach, where people are moved to the main roster. We don't see them at all.
Right.
So this is like just a good, right, we're going to get him over being a regular character. He's going to show you guys he can wrestle first and foremost, which that's why they keep giving him these opportunities in ring anytime he's there. I think it's the most, I don't know about best, but I think it's the most natural. And within this era of wrestling that we're in, people will probably take natural over anything else. So, yeah.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah, for me, it's not, you know, I definitely wouldn't want it to be a thing where he comes in and they're making all this noise about him and he has to be, you know, top of the card and, you know, challenging for the US Championship, like directly challenging straight away and all that kind of stuff. I wouldn't want it to be like that. But for me, I think my only fear is something happening to him that's very similar to, what's his name? The same one who got beat up by Fury and Waller.
Cameron Grimes.
Where Cameron Grimes has come in, his first week, he had, I think he got a big match or a big win or something like that. Then after that, he's getting beaten up in the back and nothing else. Like, and that's the fear for me with the way Carmelo's being introduced to SmackDown at the moment. For me, the safest way, and we've said this multiple times on the show, the safest way would to bring Carmelo in as part of a faction or with someone else, you know, kind of in his corner kind of thing, someone mentoring him maybe. At least for me, that's the safest way. It's not, is it the best? You can argue all the different scenarios, what would be best, but for me, that would be the safest way. This just kind of opens him up to anything can happen because it's not like Waller and Fury are in an amazing position either. So it's not like he's challenging one of the best people on, you know, kind of breathing down their neck. They're just there as well at the moment.
They're heels. They're cemented heels in that division. So it's like, it's fair for him to go and beat them and get a win against them is cool. The faction thing, like obviously the Pride is now actually, you know, formed. We've waited all this time to be called the Pride, but that's another story. I think I would be more interested in him joining a faction, whether it's them or whomsoever, if maybe when Roman's gone. If Roman's gone, the world title is available and whomsoever's going to get it. And, you know, even in a sense where Carmelo could form a, you know, build himself up and form a good challenger to the world champion. If he wants to join a faction like the Pride, then where, you know, they can all say, you know, almost have their undisputed prophecy where I want this title, these guys go for the title. Then I think it'll be a bit better. But right now, remember, I think there is still a massive disconnect between main roster fans and NXT fans. So definitely, they're just doing the diligent job of, you know, slowly introducing him, you know. Never saw anything like this with Vince. The crossover was poor, hence why the failure rate was high. So, I think we're still in like the inception stage of him getting on. They're very introductory right now. It'll improve. So things will get better.
It's a very different era, as you said. You know, in the days of Vince, when you know some guys were coming up from NXT, you know, you'd never see them or they'd been the most ridiculous gimmick and all this kind of stuff. And some of them are still suffering now and trying to rebuild themselves now. Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano are a perfect example.
I was just going to say now. Those two are just getting over now.
And struggling.
It's
weird. And obviously there are others as well. Gerard, so we're talking about Melo probably joining a faction. Mex has mentioned the name that we've been waiting for, but I don't know if it's the name we've been waiting for. Bobby Lashley and the Prophets, it's been announced, or that they're supposed to be called the Pride. Hasn't been done on TV yet. It hasn't been confirmed, but that's what the reports are saying at the moment. How do you feel about this name? Go for it. I'm gonna put myself on mute. Go for it.
No. Take yourself off mute. I was probably one of the loudest voices to say these guys need a name, you know. And here's what's scarier to me, you know, when we didn't know what their direction was and all these things, then about 2 weeks ago, they get attacked by Karrion Kross, AOP, Precious Paul Ellering is back. Like, all of a sudden, these guys show up and they have a name. A name that's been said on TV already.
Straight away.
I mean, not even 2 weeks. A wonderful name. So it can't be the final testament against these three guys, or like over in New Japan, they call ourselves these five guys. You know, like, what are we? French fries and hamburgers? Like, what are we doing here? Okay. I'm concerned. Now we call ourselves the Pride. And I say this very respectfully. If you're going to have a name, first of all, the name needs to be a name that nobody can get confused with anything else, and that it lines up with what your character is. So the final testament makes sense. Doom and gloom for, you know, Karrion Kross, the AOP, Precious Paul Ellering. They've been talking this stuff all the time. So the final testament, yeah. The last name I thought of when I looked at Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits was the Pride. And then it's also bad when your name needs an explanation, right? So people had to go, well, remember, guys, a herd of lions are called a pride. Mm-hmm. Because pride is connected with something completely different in culture and in society that I don't think the intent was to be connected to. Nice. Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits, which may be why they haven't announced the name on TV yet. Because, you know, people don't necessarily, their first thought when they hear the Pride isn't, oh, a herd of lions. Of course. So maybe that's why we haven't heard a name yet. I do hope that by this Friday, there's a name that we, so we can say it's the Final Testament versus insert name, not the Pride. Because I'm imagining the t-shirts. Can you imagine three lions with their faces on it? The Pride. Like, I don't know how this goes. I don't know how this goes, okay? So I just, that is my hope for why they've not announced the name yet, because there needs to be obviously an entire campaign with it. And you don't want to diminish those three super strong guys in any way by having a name that could get confused with something else. So Evolution made sense. The Undisputed Era made sense. The Final Testament made the Hurt Business. All of these names, the Bloodline, right? Everything is making sense. And you have a certain image in your head. So let's just announce this name in a way where we go, yes, that's it.
For me, the name is in that space where it can work or it could go horribly wrong.
Horribly.
And I think it's very much, as you said, Gerard, you know, when it comes down to the branding, the visuals, on all that kind of stuff, especially when it comes to like t-shirts and stuff like that, or their gear maybe, and all the rest of it. The second they get it wrong, it would be very difficult to recover from.
Right.
That for me is the only issue with it. The name itself isn't that bad. You can definitely make sense of it. You know, the whole thing with lions and blah blah blah, you know, Kings of the Jungle, blah. You can make sense of it, you can make it work, but it's very much in a space where it can easily go wrong as well. I don't know what a better name would have been. No idea, but that's the issue that they have. Yeah. Gonna be interesting. The last thing I want to mention is very, very quickly is Mex got it right once again.
Mm-hmm.
Months ago now. You know, we were having a conversation about, I believe it was the women's breakout tournament, and where some of these ladies are gonna end up and what they're gonna do. And one of the things that Mex said or suggested as well was that Jada Parker be aligned with LTM. Lo and behold, the guys at NXT creative have been watching the show and eventually decided to pull, you know, make the decision. and we saw in a very quick parking lot segment that Jada Parker offered herself her own services to OTM, and they were like, all right, let's go for it. Mex, how happy were you to see that, one, you got it right, and two, that this is just happening?
I'm very excited because I honestly, like, this is, it's the first time I saw her and she spoke, I think, on the vignette when she was making her debut. Just the intonation of her voice, her, the mannerisms.
Right.
I just said, OTM makes sense. It makes sense and it fits like a glove. And even the confidence, the swagger she approached them with, it was very good. I've been watching NXT Level Up. She got her first win this past week.
Yep, I hope.
And it's good to see Amari Miller back. Obviously, she's had her own challenges and stuff recently. I think I just hope that this isn't like a move to just make her a full-time valet or something. She's just within the faction. Like, this is the good thing. These breakout tournaments are very good at kind of introducing us to the next crop all at one go. But then the challenge is, right, after you've watched them on TV, who's ready to keep going on TV and where do we put them and who do we still need to do some work on? And I guess that's the first litmus test she's passed. She's still going to be on TV. She's been on NXT Level Up every week since that tournament. Like I said, she's just got her first win on the show. She's been in the backstage segments in the women's locker room on NXT. So she's maintained that position of I'm here. Now they've just found somewhere to fit her. Those boys have an upside as well. OTM, obviously, there's still a lot to come from them as a tag team, and they've got Reggie by their side. I don't know if he's kind of learning as well, or he's the one pulling, you know, calling the shots and stuff. But I feel like she's gonna bring a very good energy to even push up what the men are doing within that group. So yeah, very, very excited, man.
It is very exciting. You know, you say that you feel Reggie's learning, but I think for me, definitely is. He's been around for a while, a good few years and all the rest of it. But obviously, he was the sommelier, then he was the gymnast, and he wasn't really having matches regularly, or, you know, matches weren't lasting long, all that kind of stuff. I think for me, the most consistent tenure of him in the ring was as Scripps last year in NXT. Obviously, that's kind of died down now. He's now in the position that he's in. So he's definitely still learning something as well. Obviously, we've got the OTM boys, and obviously Jada Parker's completely fresh to this whole thing as well. So it's going to be interesting. It's just nice to see, as you said, with all the rest of the ladies that were in the breakout tournament. We've seen the likes of Ariana Grace kind of carry on almost every week. And the lady who does the sword,
Carmen Petrovic.
Carmen Petrovic. She's kind of still stuck around consistently. So now to see Jada Parker is about and has something to do is great. It's going to be interesting. I mean, you can easily see her and the female who's with the Don. What's her name?
Oh yeah, I can't Ariana. Remember her name.
It's not Ariana, it's something else,
but her character work is phenomenal. Her character work is phenomenal.
Yeah,
she's brilliant. She is brilliant. So to see them two, you know, you can definitely see them two having some kind of interaction and colliding as well very very early on. And then to see what happens after that is gonna be good. It's great to see in WWE in general, women as part of men's factions. Mm-hmm. And they're not just valets. They're not just, you know, a sensational Sherry, for example, or an Elizabeth. Yeah. You know what I mean? We're getting women that are in the ring as well. They're here to fight, mix it up, all the rest of it. You know what I mean? So it's great to see. There's so much more we could talk about, but so much time has gone. We need to go. You have been watching Wrestle Extra on the WrestleManiac UK YouTube channel. Make sure you like and subscribe the WrestleManiac UK YouTube channel to see when this guy makes puts out all of his reactions to WWE, AEW, and everything else in between. Probably a few more things on Impact as well, hopefully. You can find Mex on socials, WrestleManiac UK on Instagram, WrestleManiac.UK on X, Yep. You can find this guy, Gerard Bonner, on all things Bonafide. You can also find him on The Faction Show, his own show, as well as doing commentary for Nightmare Factory, IWE, Arshay very soon as well. Their next show is coming up very, very soon.
February 24th. That'd be special.
Nice, February 24th. Ooh, yeah. Nice. All Caribbean Wrestling. And, of course, you can find him on WWT Live as well. Some interesting things happening over there. I said it first. You'll see it soon.
Oh, yes.
you can also find Mex. I forgot to say, you can also find Mex with the Mandem on the Wrestling's podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe to see their shows each week and other content as well. You can find me, A Dazzle, on Black Wrestling Alliance on Instagram, BWA Dazzle on X. This has been our show. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you again next time.